Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and hopefully the views of Vladimir Bukovsky. That's Vladimir Bukovsky, who is to be our guest this afternoon over, and he's in England, it's midnight over there, but right now his line is busy, so we'll just have to go with an open line, unless he shows up. We're waiting for him to come, but we will accept your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, but we'd like to talk really about, of course, the Security and Prosperity Partnership, that is the plan to unite Mexico and the United States and Canada. And of course, if you doubt that there is this is the plan, you need to go to the Council on Foreign Relations website and pull down their article on building a North American community. And certainly you can read my October newsletter. I believe that's the one that's just going out now. The October newsletter is already out. The November newsletter is just going out now. But the October newsletter really goes into the background of the writings of the Council on Foreign Relations, where they tell you that the President of the United States, without the consent of Congress, without the consent of our duly elected representatives, had made an agreement with the leader at that time of Mexico, Vicente Fox, and the Prime Minister of Canada at that time was Paul Martin, to bring about this partnership, this North American community. And 2 months later, that was, I believe, March 23rd of 2005, last year, at a meeting at Waco, Texas. And then 2 months later, the Council on Foreign Relations comes out with a book that tells you exactly what happened. It was all planned ahead of time. This wasn't the president's plan. This was the plan of the internationalists who hate America, who are subversive, who want to destroy our Constitution, and of course nobody wants to say that they're subversive, but they are. This whole idea of establishing a world government is the antithesis of America. Here in America, why, we have a constitutional form of government, and that Constitution limits the power of our federal government. Once we go into these partnerships, this is simply, the whole idea is doing an end run around the Constitution, circumventing the meaning of the Constitution and the establishment of an authoritarian society. And as difficult as it may be for the average person to believe that this could really be happening, it's not accidental. It's part of a long-range plan. You can go back to Foreign Affairs magazine. Now, that's published by the Council on Foreign Relations, which is the elitist group, one of the many organizations which makes up the Brotherhood of Darkness, but it's certainly one that's very easy to identify. They have web pages, but you can get their publications at the library. And back in April of 1974, there's an article there by Richard Gardner, a Rhodes Scholar, member of the Council on Foreign Relations, a man who was appointed, as I remember, ambassador to Spain by Bill Clinton. But back in 74, Richard Gardner was talking about how they were going to use these trade agreements, the World Trade Organization and the General Agreement on Tariff and Trade, to do an end run around our Constitution. Because, you see, these people hate the Constitution because it limits their ability to establish a dictatorship in this America. And so they want to do an end run in the name of course, abiding by these agreements and these treaties. And they want, of course, to then have an all-powerful bureaucracy, just like they have in the satellite program, the satellite state that they financed in the Soviet Union for so many years, where, of course, there was no freedom, only a massive bureaucracy controlling the population. Well, we'll be back here in just a moment. And, of course, we'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest today is Vladimir Bukovsky, only we haven't been able to reach him. Vladimir is a fascinating individual. He, of course, is a Russian national. You can tell by his Naaman, he was imprisoned because of his opposition to the communist regime. He eventually was traded, or somehow or other he got to Great Britain, and he's been living in Great Britain for many years, trying to educate the British people about the fact that they are moving in Great Britain towards exactly the society that he escaped from in Russia. And now, of course, he writes extensively about what the European Union is about. You have to understand that communism is a sincere, benevolent, idealistic theory. But it doesn't work at all unless there's somebody in charge, somebody who's ruling and controlling everything, because people aren't going to work unless they're rewarded. There has to be a structure of society. And so basically what communism is an authoritarian society with a massive bureaucracy that actually watches every single individual and keeps them under control. And then, of course, it has a very effective secret police. It has the police force. It has the military. It has a massive bureaucracy. And the decisions are never made by the people. They're made by the bureaucrats. And there is no freedom. You have centralized planning. It's not a very efficient system, but it really doesn't need to be, because they're not interested in efficiency or prosperity for the people. They're interested in an authoritarian society. And this is what it's all about. And eventually establishing authoritarian societies, not only in Europe, as they're doing today, and the European Union, which Vladimir Bukovsky has written extensively about, and even told how the Americans have come over here, from the Trilateral Commission and working in conjunction with the communists, are working to bring about the European Union. Why? Because the European Union is a massive bureaucracy that circumvents all of the duly elected governments of the nations on the continent and in Great Britain. And legislatures are told they have to enforce laws because, after all, the decision has been made by the European Parliament. But after all, we've talked to Ashley Mote, who's a member of the European Parliament, and the European Parliament doesn't make the decisions. It's made by a faceless bureaucracy, as it is in any communist society. And it is the bureaucrats who are rewarded for taking away the freedom of the people, and most of them really are more concerned about their well-being than they are the fact that they are simply stripping the people of their God-given rights. But you see, this is a godless system. And what motivates this whole move towards the European Union and the Security and Prosperity Partnership here in the United States and similar organizations in South America, in Africa, and Asia, and all throughout the world, is a hatred of God. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon was to have been Vladimir Bukovsky, who is over in Great Britain. But we haven't been able to get hold of Vladimir, and of course he would have going to be telling us about what's happening in Europe. Having come from Russia himself, Vladimir Bukovsky recognizes what tyranny is like. He was eventually able to be traded and actually even released from Russian prisons and came to Great Britain and has written extensively about what life was like in the Soviet Union, very, very similar to Alexander Solzhenitsyn. But Bukovsky, of course, is staying in England, although he travels to the continent, and he travels back and forth to Russia. And he is a well-known writer. In fact, many, many people throughout the world know Vladimir Bukovsky, and he's been rather ill. It may be that that's reason off with us, although I was told a few hours ago he would be available for this interview. But under any circumstances, Vladimir Bukovsky's message is very, very simple. Members of the Trilateral Commission working in conjunction with members of the Communist Party are intent upon bringing about the European Union, consolidating Europe, taking away the freedom from the people there, taking away their national sovereignty, and then eventually merging Europe with Russia into this one big, happy communist dictatorship, where freedom, as you and I know it, and even the people of Europe are known it, will soon become a remembrance of things past. Well, we may or may not be able to get Mr. Bukovsky, so if you'd like to give us a call, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But all the telltale sales signs are here. They have actually, of course, agreed. The president, without the consent of Congress, in fact, most members of Congress, either don't know or don't want to admit they know about this, plan to betray our Constitution, to forgo the a national sovereignty of our nation, and to establish a security and prosperity partnership. And basically, this was agreed to on March 23rd of last year. There's a book that came out in May of last year called Building a North American Community. It's published by the Council on Foreign Relations. You can actually pull this down off of their website, or actually I have a copy I was able to get directly from the Council on Foreign Relations. There's no question it's there. Building a North American Community actually merges law enforcement. It merges the social services, and so that we will be helping to fund the Social Security and other payments for people in Mexico, and they'll, of course, be helping fund the programs here. It will certainly regulate and intertwine our law enforcement, our defense system. In fact, the whole idea is, wouldn't it be much easier just to have to defend one border? After all, we have to defend this 2,000-mile border between us and Mexico. Wouldn't it be a lot better if we were just defending that little short border that Mexico has down in, you know, with Central America? And a lot of people would say, yeah, that does sound pretty good. What they really want, of course, is to allow massive immigration into the United States, which is why the Bush administration has consistently refused to enforce our immigration laws. Why they have had a catch, if at least, program by which if you came from a terrorist country and a Muslim country and you were a Muslim and you had violated our laws and snuck into across our southern border into this country, and we don't know whether you're a terrorist or not, but don't you worry, we're not going to infringe on your constitutional rights. And so these aliens, these many of them suspected terrorists, are arrested and then they're booked and then they're immediately let go. But they have to cross their heart and hope to die and promise they'll come back in 30 to 60 days for a deportation hearing, and they never come back. It's known as catch and release program. If you want to know about it, go up on the Internet and just Google in catch and release program. It's been going on for 5 years now. I heard Michael Chertoff say, oh, we're going to do away with this program. Why did they wait 5 years to do away with it? And from what we get from the people we know working down along the border, Michael Chertoff, like most people work for government, you can tell when they're lying because their lips are moving, and that they have not changed the, or effectively changed the catch and release program, and they're still catching people and releasing them. Or they'll say, well, gee, we just don't have enough places to put them, so we're just going to have to let them go, and they'll be back here in a month. And you know, the most amazing thing is, most of them don't come back for their hearings. Now, of course, if you're Mexican, why, we don't even bother to put you in any sort of detention. We just take you back across the border so you can try to come in again. And we only catch maybe 1 in 3 or 1 in 4 of the people coming across. So if at first you don't succeed, you try again. Now, why does the Bush administration want this? Because their loyalty is not to the United States of America. It is this internationalist, globalist dream of a new world order and a new world religion. The president tells us he prays to the Muslim God. We all pray to the same God. And, well, it's not the God that I pray to. It may be the God that he prays to. But the God of the Muslim God is the moon God. It's Allah. It is not the God of the Old Testament. It's not the God of that we would be praying to here. So, anyway, we finally got Mr. Vladimir Bukovsky on the line. But let me just simply point out that what we are seeing today is a planned program to destroy the sovereignty of the United States, to encourage not illegal immigration or not even, it's called migration now. These are simply migrants coming to this country. Why? Why they're migrating from one part of this North American hemisphere to another. And there is a plan here in the United States, just as there is a plan in Europe, to destroy the sovereignty of the nations. Mr. Bukovsky, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you so very much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Well, why don't you tell us, for our listeners who do not know about you, you were actually in Russia. Were you, you were imprisoned over there for a time, weren't you?
Oh, in total for 12 years.
For 12 years? How did you get out?
I was exchanged for a Chilean communist.
All right, fine. Well, I'm glad that they got you over in England, but my understanding is that you're very, very concerned that, you know, you may have escaped from communism in Russia, but the same thing seems to be happening in, in Great Britain and certainly on the continent today. Would you like to give us your background and how the Trilateral Commission plays into this?
Well, I mean, what I observe already for the, let's say, 6-8 years, probably more, is the, some kind of civilization of life here. Destruction of democracy, surrender of sovereignty by the countries in the name of some kind of supranational bureaucratic structure, unelectable, unelected, which we cannot change. The attack on our freedom of speech, very consistent attack. Now, throughout Europe, slowly they introduce all kind of limitations and criminal responsibility for what they call hate speech. I mean, which is very difficult to define. Mind you, it's very specific hate speech. I mean, it's okay to hate someone who smokes cigarettes. That you're welcome to be hateful, but some selected, nominated minorities or lifestyle, you cannot say anything. You will be imprisoned for that. I mean, it's the whole concept that someone in the free world can be imprisoned for exercising his freedom of speech, for me, is unbelievable.
Well, of course, is this in all of the countries in the European Union, or is this just in a few countries like Austria, where they've, you know, this country of Austria passed this foolish legislation?
It's everywhere.
Oh, really?
We have it. French have it. Scandinavians have it. Germans have it. It's everywhere, and it's growing.
Now, is this being imposed by the European Union Parliament, or is this being imposed state by state, by the individual state parliaments?
Well, European Parliament has no power. It's like something like Supreme Soviet we had in the Soviet Union, which was kind of a rubber stamp. I mean, believe it or not, average member of European Parliament has 6 minutes a year to speak in chamber. It's just a formality. They paid huge money to be happy, and they don't do anything. They do not. They don't have a right to confirm or not confirm any commissioner. They only can have a general say about the whole commission once, and then they cannot return to question of non-confidence or whatever. It's unbelievable. The whole structure is governed by unelected 25 commissioners. Or commissars, or whatever you call them. And it so much reminds me the former Soviet structures and mentality now that it's really frightening.
Well, I think we should all be concerned because, of course, I think what you're seeing in Europe is simply foreshadows what we're going to be seeing here in America. But then the people of Europe really don't believe they could be moving into a totalitarian state, and certainly the people in America know it could never happen here. But unfortunately, it is happening in both continents, isn't it?
Yes, it happens. I mean, the people do not expect it. They always try to find excuses to say, oh, it's a temporary measure. It will be changed back. You know, it's just awkward phrasing. They will correct it. People have enormous trust in the institutions, and they do not realize that institutions as such and the political establishment as such are thoroughly corrupt today. It's not what it was 30 years ago when I came, believe me. It was completely different 30 years ago. It was much more vibrant, vital democracy with people participating, you know, having meetings, pickets, strikes, whatever, to express their own wish and disagreements and support. Today there is nothing. It's a dead, it's absolutely dead kingdom. Nothing happened. All we have is some kind of a split between left and extreme left. And that's it. There is no politics outside of that.
All right. And, of course, when I see Tony Blair over there, and I realize, of course, he's such a good friend of our president, you know, and two more insipid-looking individuals I've never seen. But they are really dangerous because they're leading the world into what I fear will be a third world war and will be used to justify ever more control over our lives, or maybe they don't even need any justification. They seem to be so intent upon progressive expansion of government control. Well, Mr. Babkowski, when we talked before, you mentioned something about the Trilateral Commission and a meeting between the trilaterals. And was that the communist? What was that story all about?
Well, they're not communists, but whoever they are, the things they were talking about really scared me. I mean, in 1992, I had an unprecedented access to secret documents of former Politburo and Central Committee in Moscow. It was a trial, a constitutional trial, between Yeltsin, President Yeltsin, and the Communist Party. And I was invited officially as an expert at the Constitutional Court. So in that capacity, I could subpoena documents and acquaint myself with them and see them. And I copied many of them semi-legally. Among them, I was interested in the Soviet connection of the European integration. And I discovered so much. I was amazed. I mean, the whole idea was born between the Soviets, Gorbachev and his lot, and the Western left-wing parties, the Italian Communists, the German Social Democrats, and so on.
Well, now, what part did the Trilateral Commission, or at least the American elitists, play in this whole thing?
Well, that came later. I remember reading the minutes, the transcript of a conversation between the delegation of Trilateral Commission and Gorbachev. They came in 1989, at the beginning of the year, I think in January or something like that. It consisted of Giscard d'Estaing, the French former president, Nakasone, former prime minister of Japan, Henry Kissinger, and Rockefeller. They talked in general with Gorbachev about how to integrate Soviet economy into the world economy, how to put them in touch with the international financial institutions like GATT, like IMF, like World Bank. But then suddenly, Giscard d'Estaing took floor, and she said, Mr. President, it might happen in 10 years or in 15 years, I can't tell you definitely, but Europe is going to be a united state. You would have to think, how would you interact with this new United State? Would you be joining it? Would you be cooperating with it? What would you do if some East European countries would like to join it? Would you object to that? You have to decide, and in general, you have to prepare yourself to live with this United European State. That was incredible. That was 1989. The Maastricht Agreement, under which this European Union was first formed, was actually proclaimed in 1992. That is 3 years before they actually discussed it with Gorbachev. And even that was only the first step, and we had a referendum on it, and some countries didn't accept Maastricht Agreement. Then there were other agreements. And then 15 years later, exactly as Giscard d'Estaing said, they fielded the new European Constitution. That was the final stroke, after which the European countries would not be regarded as separate countries, but as a part of one United State.
And of course, I don't think that the average, certainly the average citizen of Europe, has no idea that these discussions were held. They don't even really understand what this is all about. They were told this was simply a trading system, so they would benefit from free trade, weren't they?
Exactly. I mean, prior to that...
Hold that thought right there, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan here. Our guest is Mr. Vladimir Bukovsky, who was in prison for 12 years, was traded for, a Chilean communist, was able to then come to the West, and he's been, of course, trying to wake people up. Back in, certainly in the early 1990s, he was asked to go back to Russia to participate in a trial there between Yeltsin and the Communist Party. And here he had the opportunity to read many of the files, and since he can read Russian, he found that in 1989, there was a meeting held between four people from the West, with David Rockefeller, Henry Kissinger,
Nakasone.
Right, and then the four of them came to meet with Gorbachev. They told him the European Union was going to become a United States of Europe. There was going to be a one state. What was Gorbachev going to do about it? Was he going to work with them? Was he going to object to certainly the Eastern European countries joining this? And he would have to understand that They were going to have a United States of Europe. Europe was going to become one state. Now, this is 1989. 2 years or 3 years later, they actually signed the Maastricht Treaty, which laid out the foundation for the European Union. But even then, they never told the European people what this was all about. They simply lied to them about it, just as they're lying to the American people today about the North American Union that's underway. So you pick up the story there, please. Mr. Bukowski, go right ahead.
Yes.
I was just reviewing that for our listeners who didn't hear what you had to say.
Yeah. You summarized it quite rightly. One thing they deceived the European people on is the question of sovereignty. Because repeatedly, all leaders, all political leaders in Europe would always say that the processes of European integration are not going to affect sovereignty of any one of them. There is only the question of economic integration, which will make everyone more happy and more prosperous. They never even mentioned it. Although, even in 1989, it was already clear that we are talking about the abrogation of sovereignty of European states.
And I think this is what's so important. It's all based upon a lie. And they lie to the European people. And they're lying and deceiving the American people today. The plan is to do away with our sovereignty as the United States and merge us with Mexico and Canada and then eventually, of course, with all of Central America. They know exactly what they're doing. Why didn't they want the people of Europe, though, to know what it was about? Do you think the people would have objected?
I think so, particularly in the early stages. Even Maastricht Treaty, was not universally accepted. I mean, several countries voted against it, and then they were forced to have a second referendum in order to change their mind. And if they would vote again against it, there would be a third, fourth, fifth referendum till people vote the way they want it. And then there will be no more referendums. The same happened about the Treaty of Nice, against which Ireland voted. And yet, Ireland was made to vote again a couple of years later and to vote in the right way after being bombarded with massive and very expensive propaganda. So that is what they're doing. It's a coercion. It's not a free will of European people.
And, of course, there's this group of elitists and, of course, these people that had gone over to talk to Gorbachev back in 1989 were from the Trilateral Commission. Here was David Rockefeller, formed it, Henry Kissinger, a leading member, and they are simply one of the major forces behind this whole move towards world government.
Yes, I agree with you. I mean, in many documents, this subject of possible world governance, they don't say government, they say governance, but that does make a difference, it comes up. It's, for example, Gorbachev talks to president of Argentina, Menem, Carl Menem. And in the conversation, they start talking about the world government and how much more convenient it will be and that everyone agrees on that and so on and so forth. I have it as a document. You know, it's not a figment of anybody's imagination. It's a transcript of official negotiations between two leaders of two states. So that, And they're talking about it, not only them, other people coming to Moscow to talk about it, the socialists, the European socialists, the communists, whatever. And they all talk about one is the same thing, how to move slowly, not to frighten, not to wake up people by any abrupt movement, slowly, surreptitiously, toward integration of the world, which will be governed by one government.
And, of course, I think that most people here in America, they cannot imagine what it would be like to live without freedom. And yet, because this is how they're going to take it away, they're not going to have to, of course, simply send the stormtroopers down the streets. They're going to be American troops. And we've passed legislation here in America now where the president can now use the American troops against the American personnel. We've repealed the Posse Comitatus Act, and freedom will soon be gone. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Our guest is Mr. Vladimir Bukovsky. It's past midnight over there in Great Britain where he lives, and he's kind enough to come on with us. And I know he hasn't been feeling well recently, but I do so much appreciate your being with us. What can we do to make the people of Europe understand what's going on? And even if they do understand, do you think there are enough who value personal freedom to oppose this imposition of this massive totalitarian bureaucracy on the people of Europe?
You know, people in Europe start to understand it, and much more rapidly than we expected. I mean, look at the attempt at forcing on them the European Constitution. Two referendums brought extremely negative results. In France, 58% voted against it. In Holland, more than 60% voted against that. And at that stage, they stopped the process of referendum, because they knew that the results in other countries might be even more staggering. So what they do, did they abandon the whole plan? No. Now they introduce separate elements of this constitution through the directives of the European Commission, slowly forcing countries to implement them as their own national legislation. And they also talk about returning to the process of ratification of constitution after a certain cooling period, after a massive propaganda, and so on and so forth. They'll try to force it on us again. So these people never relent. Believe it. They would be trying again and again. What can we do about it? That's a good question. I mean, people have enormous power only if they understand it. Unfortunately, today, the traditional means of our expression of our view are not in our hands anymore. I mean, elections are organized in such a way that we don't have the alternative we would like to have. I mean, in Britain, by all public opinion polls, more than 60% are against further integration. And yet, we don't have a candidate on any elections which would be running from that platform. He would not be allowed to run with that platform. Our media is completely controlled. A television wouldn't allow even debates about further integration and any use of it or harm of it. They wouldn't even allow a debate, a simple debate in a talk show. That would not be allowed. Can you imagine the degree of control now they exercise over that? And yet, a massive grassroots movement can counteract it. We have organizations in Britain and in many countries of Europe now which are growing.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment with Vladimir Bukovsky. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Mr. Vladimir Bukovsky. And I'd simply asked him, what can be done? And he said there pretty are movements over in Europe now and organizations on the continent and Great Britain trying to awaken the American people. The problem is that the media is as controlled in Europe as it is here. I mean, you're not going to hear this debate on the general media, certainly we have in the United States. Lou Dobbs is about the only person who speaks out, but most of the people, the Rush Limbaughs and the Sean Hannitys here in the United States, and I'm sure they have counterparts in Europe, these popular communicators are simply paid to lie to the European people, and here in America, to lie to the American people to keep them happy so they will not realize, you know, what's really going on. And of course, we tend to trust and identify these nice, friendly faces we see on television. Mr. Bukovsky said that they would not allow a debate on a talk radio program about the loss of sovereignty, the dangers of merging the countries, and of course, bring them all under the central control. And so, but apparently they've had to back down in recent years because of the fact that France, and I believe it was Denmark,
Holland.
They actually just refused to ratify the Constitution. So they're simply propagandizing the people, but they're progressing. It doesn't matter what the people think in Europe. It doesn't matter what the people think here in the United States. We're so diverted by what's going on in the Middle East and this scandal or that scandal. Why, we do not see that we're losing our freedom here at home. And I'm sure this is the sort of techniques that they use over there. Don't they use a lot of distractions to try to keep people from realizing what this is really about?
Oh, yes. I mean, there are so many of them, and they invent new every day. I mean, right now is a big hit. is international terrorism. I mean, we don't have any terrorism here, but we have all the struggle against it, which would involve the abridgment of our freedoms, the Emergency Powers Act. I mean, Britain exists more than 1,000 years. It had wars, it had invasions, Napoleon, Hitler, Cold War, and never at any of these stages British legislators ever considered introducing a law on emergency powers. And now, when we are not actually under any threat, this kind of a law is rushed through Parliament. All kind of restrictions on our speech and so on and so forth, it all comes under the disguise of counter-terrorist measures. And we don't have any terrorism. I mean, we had a couple of years ago an explosion in a bus in an underground, which we still don't know who did. No one yet was standing a trial for that. So we really don't know who did that and why. And yet, under this smokescreen of so-called threat of terrorism, which is completely imaginary, completely virtual, we have to give up our traditional freedoms. They're introducing ID card in Britain with all the parameters, including biometrics in it, which would include all kind of our accounts or our history of medical histories and God knows what. It's a police state advancing on us for no good reason. I mean, when I came to the West, and particularly to Britain 30 years ago, we did have terrorism. We had Irish terrorism, we had Red Brigades in Italy, we had Baader Meinhof in Germany. In every country, there were terrorist organizations, most of them, mind you, sponsored by the Soviet Union. And on the top of it, there was Palestinian terrorism. And every week, something was blowing up. And yet, no one was thinking about abridging our freedoms or introducing some strict regulations or IDs, nothing of the sort. Today, when we don't have it like that, they suddenly introduce these things. That is not a coincidental thing. That is a deliberate plan. Hysteria is whipped up about this so-called terrorism, which we don't see.
And, of course, here in the United States, we haven't had a serious terrorist attack for 5 years, but they keep having all these programs on television all about the terrorist plot, and their made-up plots, but we see this over and over and over again, so they don't need a real terrorist attack. They've created that perception in their mind that the terrorists are here, and they're going to get us if we don't give up our freedom to the state. Well, let's go ahead and get your webpage out, and if people would like to get the material you have, actually you have a little booklet that we have made some copies of. It's called EUSSR, and it's excellent. What is that, about 50 pages?
Yeah, about. I've made the expanded version of it, published it in France, in Poland, in many other countries, in Italy. That's kind of a brief version, which I was in a hurry to publish before referendums on constitution in Europe.
All right. Our telephone number, of course, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, do you have a website where people could go or perhaps get some of your material?
Well, there are many organizations which maintain a website. There is the UKIP, United Kingdom Independence Party. There is the Freedom Association. There are many movements now emerging and building and growing, the democracy movement, the whatever. I mean, people, grassroots movements are springing up because people start to realize how dangerous the situation became. So you will find plenty of it. If you type in Google something like Eurosceptic, you will find tens of thousands of links immediately all over Europe.
All right, and I think it's so vitally important that people understand that what is happening to Europe is going to happen here in the United States. What's happening in Europe simply foreshadows the movement in America, because it was created and brought about in Europe by American organizations, powerful American and English organizations that have no loyalty to either England or the United States. Their loyalty to this idea of a one-world government under a ruling elite. And believe me, if people like David Rockefeller, who wants to be part of that elite, if you haven't read his memoirs, you need to get it, where he says, you know, some people say that I and my family are part of a cabal that is conspiring to bring about a new international economic order, and that's the charge. I plead guilty. I'm a proud internationalist. And he spent his whole life trying to destroy the sovereignty of our nation, one of the most powerful, fabulously wealthy men in the world today. And he has lots of friends. Well, do you think that the average person in Europe realizes the American influence in pushing this European Union? I know that Manet, I think it was his name, he was the father of the European Union, but certainly so much of the funding of this whole thing has come from America, hasn't it?
Well, a lot of input is coming from America. I mean, the general idea of world government, I think, initially came from America. But Europeans, of course, don't know that. What we do see is emergence of this supranational monster, which is going to swallow all our national sovereignties and traditions and way of life. And people react to that. I mean, to see the international dimension of it, you need to study it. You have to research into it. Then you will suddenly see the big picture. For simple people in Europe, it's sufficient to see that their own personal freedoms are breached and their nation's sovereignty is trampled on.
All right. In fact, apparently there's a growing movement over there, but it's how do you reach people when the media is controlled? How do you reach people when the radio is controlled? How do you reach people when, of course, they have so many diversions and now the threat of Islamic terrorism, and my goodness, we've got to worry about that, without realizing this is all being contrived as a diversion so we won't realize that our boys are sent overseas to fight for freedom, why we're losing our freedom here at home. How do the people in Europe and in Great Britain feel about the continued senseless war in the Middle East that we prolonged for longer than the Second World War? We've been over there for well over 3.5 years now, fighting in Iraq and almost well over 5 years fighting in Afghanistan. How do the people of Europe and Great Britain feel about England's involvement in that war?
Well, the war in Iraq is very unpopular in Europe, and the many segments of population are kind of disaffected with this and protesting against that. But the main dimension we notice is that how much our freedom is taken away for the sake of something which is unattainable and really illusionary. People don't think much about Iraq itself or Middle East. They think about the effects it produces on our countries and how much it is used politically against us. That is the root of disaffection. I mean, the war itself initially, no one could understand what it means, why, what is the purpose of it, what will be the result, what could be called victory, how to define a victory in this kind of a conflict and whatever. So that made people uneasy. But the real protest grows not so much against a war as such as against the political abuse of that situation by the politicians here at home.
Well, how did Tony Blair ever get reelected? He had an election sometime, over the last 6 months to a year, and he got, of course, wasn't that a new election time very much immediately after that? That bombing of a couple of buses and a train, where, of course, at least the stories we have is that, you know, the explosives were not inside, they were underneath, because at least we heard, and I don't know if you've heard this, that the metal was bent up, you know, into the cabin of the buses and the trains, not down as if the explosives were inside. Have you heard that story?
I don't know much details about the explosion and its technique. What we do know, and that is officially confirmed, that these so-called suicide bombers, for some reason, had a timing device. I mean, I never heard about the suicide bombers going with timing device. It's counterproductive. It never happens. Suicide bomber, by definition, must choose the most appropriate moment when his action would be the most damaging. If you have a timing device, it might actually blow you up when you are alone. So the impression is that these people probably didn't know what they're carrying. They simply couldn't know. I mean, they were given some kind of assignment to deliver a parcel from one part of the city to another. And in a given time, without them knowing it, the whole thing blew up. So that is a possibility.
Now, do some of the people over in Great Britain actually feel that maybe this whole thing was contrived? Because it occurred within, I think, 10 days of the coming elections.
Yeah, well, there was a feeling like that, some kind of suspicion. They try to whip up hysteria, saying, oh, it's the worst attack on London ever. But the people in Britain, they're very skeptical. Someone has written a letter in the newspaper saying, come on, they had the Battle of Britain, the Germans bombing us in 1940, destroying half of London. I mean, if that wasn't the worst, then what could be? So why do you offer us this incident, which killed, unfortunately, 50 people, as the worst incident ever happening in London? I mean, so people's skepticism is always helpful. You know, it kind of dumps up the hysteria the leaders try to leap up.
Well, of course, I wish we had more skeptical people over here. People have forgotten that the bombing in Spain is just about a week before the elections over there. It is certainly convenient to those terrorist holders to hold the bombings just before the election is coming up for the impact on the minds of the people in Great Britain and the minds of the people in Spain. So anyway, of course, as this whole thing unfolds, if we do not stop this, if you cannot stop that in Europe, and we cannot stop this movement in the United States, then those people who are dedicated to the establishment of a world government under their control will succeed. Does the average individual really understand the implications, what this will mean to them, if the sovereignty of their nation is gone and they're under this massive authoritarian bureaucracy, a faceless bureaucracy that is answerable, not answerable to the people?
Well, in Britain, they do realize the danger of growing European Union. And people realize it more and more and become more and more openly protesting against it. I mean, it came to a point when, for the sake of political correctness, we are told we shouldn't celebrate Christmas, or at least not in public places, because it might offend the feelings of Muslims, and Muslims are not supposed to quote Quran, we are not supposed to quote Bible. I mean, that becomes really ridiculous. I mean, I'm not a religious man myself, but, think about these religious communities. I mean, they're not harming anyone. They're just reading their holy scriptures. Why should the state intervene into these kind of things and prohibit them under the name of the religious hate speech? I mean, that's ridiculous. That's actually infringement on people's freedoms, liberties.
Well, of course, this whole thing is designed to take away liberty because the elite don't think that we're capable of governing ourselves. They want to control everybody. It's almost like they want to return to a feudalistic type of society.
It's more centralized than any feudalistic society. Feudalistic society was much more fragmented. The local feudal would be the suzerain, and the next one would be completely different. The feudalism was much better than what we are heading for. It's going to be a centralized governance of the world. That is much worse. I mean, these will be all provinces.
And, of course, really, it will be really not the elected representatives that are running this. It will be simply a faceless bureaucracy answerable to no one.
Yeah, exactly that. And I mean, you ask me why Tony Blair is reelected. I mean, the problem is that the right part of political spectrum completely collapsed in Britain. It split, it became ineffectual, people left it, and we don't have Conservative Party to speak about. It nominally exists, but it's so pathetic that no one can vote for it, even though the country openly and vehemently hates Tony Blair.
In other words, even though the people hate him, they've managed to effectively just destroy the opposition. And, of course, we see this here in America, where, of course, the conservative and the anti-communist and even the Christian organizations have been effectively neutralized. And,
yeah.
Of course, there is no opposition within the conservative Christian or anti-communist leadership here in America to oppose this move towards the union, the North American Union of Mexico, the United States and Canada, and people say it could never happen. And I would like to ask why it couldn't happen. They've gotten away with it in Europe, and independent of how the people of Europe feel, and even independent of how the people of Great Britain feel, and with no active leadership on the other side, how are we going to turn this around? And, you know, here in the United States, we have electronic voting machines. They simply lie. I mean, there's no paper trail. You don't know whether the vote you counted ever was really cast that way or not. you can fix these electronic voting machines. Do you have those over in Europe yet?
No, not yet. But what they introduced recently in Britain is so-called postal vote. And that has already proven to be a massive fraud. Because, you know, those who receive this postal vote, they decide whether to use them or not and how to qualify them. So that's already proven, even in court, this postal vote. And now postal vote is massive. I mean, it's millions of people. It's not just marginal or some disabled people. No. No, it's very big. It's going to be 25% of the total vote.
You mean these people...
That is known to be rigged.
In other words, what you're saying is this is voting by mail rather than actually going to the voting place.
That's right.
And, of course, but at least there's a paper trail there, if anybody can follow it. But then, of course, how do you know that they're not rigging the votes there in the voting department? We're going to be back in just a moment to wrap up the program here. Well, we've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program. What thoughts would you like to leave with the American people?
I think the most important thing in the face of such calamity and such danger is never to despair. I mean, the power of individual, as I have proven to myself and to my colleagues in the Soviet Union, the most oppressive dictatorial totalitarian regime in history, the power of individual is really huge. Those who decided they would not accept it and would go to any lengths to prove it and to resist it would ultimately prevail. We started this as a handful of youngsters in the 60s, in the early 60s, a campaign against the Soviet system for individual freedoms. 40 odd years down the road, there is no Soviet Union anymore.
No, but of course you've got Putin over there, and I certainly think that he's not very much of a Democrat. We find an awful lot of people, whether you're the reporter who reports about the phony bombings there in Moscow, which they blamed on the Chechens. They blew up a whole flock of Russians, blamed it on the Chechens, and a reporter says, no, that was a KGB operation, something of the sort, and they killed her just recently.
And they killed a friend of mine in London recently by poisoning him. Precisely because he was revealing all their crimes.
What was his name?
Litvinenko, yes.
And basically, then you actually knew him.
Yeah, well, I knew him very closely. He was a good friend of mine, and in a sense, my student, because he was 20 years younger than I am. So I was kind of tutoring him and explaining how to do things and whatnot. And yet, what now? He's killed. He's poisoned, definitely, by the KGB. It's proven by police now. What Tony Blair says about it, it was recently leaked in Sunday Times that the cabinet meeting, Tony Blair said, priority for us is to retain good friendly relations with Russia. It is a license to kill. Okay, comrades, come and kill anyone you dislike as long as we are good friends on the top.
Well, you know, what a tragic reflection that is of a totally corrupt British leader who thinks nothing of murder as long as we have nice relationships.
He was a British citizen. He got British citizenship. So a British citizen on British soil was killed by foreign agents. And Tony Blair doesn't want to spoil relations with their leaders.
Well, I think it's a tragic situation that you have Tony Blair. And that we have George Bush as our leader. God bless you. Thank you so very much for being with us. I hope you get feeling better here in the near future.
Thank you.
God bless you. And thanks so much for staying up to be with us. Well, thank you. And our guest has been Mr. Vladimir Bukovsky, and certainly one of the great leaders over in Europe. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you enjoyed our interview with Vladimir Bukovsky. And we certainly hope that you'll want to get his booklet. It's about 50 pages or more. It's called EUSSR. But it's very inexpensive. But it will tell you the story about how the Americans were over there from the Trilateral Commission in 1989 planning on how they were going to bring about this European Union. Who were they meeting with? Gorbachev. Telling him in 1989 they were going to create this European state. And 3 years later, the European countries signed the Maastricht Treaty, which laid out the foundation for the European Union, which was to create the United States of Europe, and with a loss of all sovereignty. And eventually, of course, the plan is to do the same thing in North America, in South America, and they're using Hugo Chavez and his hatred of America to unite the South American countries into their trading blocs. They're doing it in Africa, they're doing it in Asia, they're doing it in the Arab countries, and then they'll unite them all together into the one world government. That's their plan. They've talked about it. They laugh about it. They think we're so stupid, we can't figure out what's going on. If you have not yet read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, to understand how it all works, let me suggest you get it. You can get the book, or the video, or the DVD, or you can get a tape, or you can get them, at least three of them together as the Brotherhood of Darkness special. We hope you'll get that, and then you have to understand the forces that are behind this. And let me suggest we have Malachi Martin's book, Hostage to the Devil. You need to read it. It was written back in about 1980. It had a profound impact on me then, and of course now I know so much more, and understand that there is another dimension out there. We offer not only Malachi Martin's book, but also a four-tape set of interviews with Malachi Martin, where he talks about the satanic ritual in the basement of the Vatican. Now, these forces are in the Protestant church, they're in the Jewish religion, they permeate every aspect of our society. And most people have no idea that there really is another dimension, and there are people in contact with other dimensions. There is a supernatural dimension. There is a world satanic conspiracy, and there really are people who worship the other God. And what is their goal? To bring about a one world government and a new world religion. So you really should think about getting the Malachi Martin special. Let me suggest that many of you want to get the videos, They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, 3-hour, 4-hour, 10-hour version. It'll change your life forever. The video, the Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, Rape of the Soul, an excellent DVD. If you want to understand what really happened on 9-1-1, we have a new video. It's called 9-1-1 Mystery. We have Terror Storm, and actually, you'll hear the discussion of the London bombing just about a week before the British election, so they could get Tony Blair reelected. And there, of course, you'll hear a member of the British Parliament, a member of the former member of British MI5, talking about it was obviously an intelligence operation. It wasn't a terrorist at all. And the same thing is true as far as the Spanish bombing. 5 days, 6 days, 7 days before the Spanish election, it's all done for your perception. Terror Storm is it, Alex Jones's video we've recommended. So you want to get Terror Storm, you want to get 9-1-1 Mysteries, you want to get 9-1-1 Press for the Truth, the story of the Jersey Girls, Dave Van Cleiss's excellent video, In Plain Sight, and then, of course, the video that we carry that nobody else carries that I know, and that's David Wagner's 9-1-1, The Day That Changed America Forever. You'll find footage there you won't find elsewhere. That's 9-1-1, The Day That Changed America Forever. We can provide that in DVD, although we'll have to order that. But we're hoping it's going to be here very, very soon. We have it in video right now. We hope many of you will go to our website of RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. We hope many of you will consider helping us here at Radio Liberty. If you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, again, 1-800-544-8927. And then please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers. But please pray for Radio Liberty. And when you pray for Radio Liberty, please pray for our provision and protection, because we're on the front lines of this spiritual battle.